Be sure to follow us on Facebook and Twitter and subscribe on iTunes so you don't miss a single episode. And if you like the show and think we deserve a 5-star rating, and obviously we do, rate us and post a review. Also, although our main purpose in life is to entertain you, producing this show costs actual money, so please help out by going to patreon.com/GilbertGottfried and pledging your support to receive all sorts of goodies, merchandise, personalized roast, and shout-outs, advanced access to episodes, or personal messages from me, Gilbert Gottfried. And if we raise enough, maybe I can finally get a new co-host. I'm thinking of the Scarlett Johansson robot. Gilbert Gottfried, and this is Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast. I'm here with my co-host, Frank Santopadre, and we're once again at Nutmeg with our engineer, Frank Verderosa. Now, if you think when we have one guest, these introductions are long, pretty much tell you we could have a cab waiting for you after the. There'll be no time for the actual
interview. It's a two-pager.
Yes.
It's a rare two-page intro.
Our guests this week are two of the busiest, most versatile, and most accomplished actors of their generation. Jessica Walter has starred in Broadway plays and musicals, appeared in police dramas, situation comedies, soap operas, and variety shows, and appeared in films like The Group, Grand Prix, Lilith, Tapeheads, The Flamenco Kid, The Slums of Beverly Hills, Bye Bye Braverman, and of course, Clint Eastwood's directorial debut, Play Misty for Me. Her numerous, and I do mean numerous, TV appearances include The Fugitive, Mannix, Love American Style, Columbo, Ironside, Hawaii Five-O, Dinosaurs, Coach, Just Shoot Me, The Big Bang Theory, Retired at 35, Saving Grace, and Amy Prentice, for which she won an Emmy as an Outstanding Lead Actress. She's also been nominated for an Emmy for her role as the boozy socialite Lucille Bluth on this beloved comedy, Arrested Development. And she currently stars in the hit FX series Archer as the headstrong spy mistress Mallory Archer. Ron Liebman is
bravo.
Should love we have him. An applause?
I love him. He's just he moves me deeply. I heard he passed away. Is that true? Well, read his credits anyway. Give him a break.
This is our in memoriam part of the show.
Amazing.
Let him do the intro.
I don't care about it. Let's just get to the interview.
Ron Liebman is an award-winning performer with stage credits, including Rumors, I Ought to Be in Pictures, We Bombed in New Haven, The Merchant of Venice, winning a Tony for his powerful performance as Roy Cohen in the Pulitzer Prize-winning play Angels in America. TV appearances include Police Story, The Practice, Law and Order, Murder, She Wrote, Friends, and The Sopranos. He also won...
It's the saddest thing I've ever heard.
Won an Emmy for his role as the ex-con turned lawyer in the CBS series Cause, and a show he also co-wrote and co-created. And he's been in memorable films like The Super Cops, Slaughterhouse-Five, Norma Rae, Farlap, Zorro the Gay Blade, Night Falls on Manhattan, Garden State, and two personal favorites on this podcast, The Hot Rock and Where's Papa? In their long and distinguished careers, they've shared the screen with James Garner, Warren Beatty, Kirk Douglas, Zero Mostel, George Segal, Helen Hayes, Charlton Heston, Burt Lancaster, Gene Hackman, and Robert Redford, and worked with iconic directors like George Roy Hill, Arthur Hiller, John Frankenheimer, Herbert Ross, and Sidney Lumet. Please welcome to the show our very first married couple. And
let's see how the night goes, okay?
The jury's still out.
The jury's still out is right.
And the most successful acting duo since Lunton Fontaine, Jessica Walter and Ron Liebman.
Bravo.
You know, Neil Simon said we were the Polish Lunts.
Oh, I love that.
We were in rumors together. He said, you're the Polish Lunts.
Oh, I love it.
And I was talking to you right before we went on. I just wanted the audience to... When I was a kid, me and my two older sisters, Arlene and Karen, lived in Crown Heights, Brooklyn. And we would go, I don't know, maybe it was filming 2 days or three, we would walk over to the Brooklyn Museum to watch the car crash in front of the Brooklyn Museum for the movie The Hot Rock.
What a lonely childhood.
Trust me.
You have no idea, Ron.
Trust me. If I had a good social life, I wouldn't know all these things.
That's right.
Me and Frank are basically products of a terrible social life.
We've talked about The Hot Rock on this show. You were Merch, the driver.
Yeah, I was Merch, the driver, yes. I had to learn how to drive one of those 37-wheeler things. I actually had to learn that. And I did. It was an interesting bunch of people, George Segal and Robert Redford, Paul Sand, and Zero. I got to work with Zero, who I adored.
Like?
Well, we shared a trailer. They asked me if that was all right. They were trying to save some money. So I said, sure. And I couldn't wait to meet him because I had such a crush on him. I just loved him. I'd seen him in like off-Broadway things like Ulysses in Night Town and, of course, in Fiddler by that point. And I'd come into the trailer and he'd hide behind his New York Times and kind of, and he wouldn't say good morning. And he had a driver and a dresser who worked for him, and I'd say good morning, and he wouldn't talk to me. So I'm sharing a trailer with two guys who are not talking to me. I don't know why. And I came in the second day, good morning, silence. And I see Zero hiding behind the New York Times. He didn't say anything. I asked the AD, I said, am I doing something that's offending these people? I said, oh, you don't know. The guy who drives for him can't speak. And that's why he hired him years ago. He doesn't speak. He doesn't hear that well. And Zero, he said, I can't explain. So the third day I walked into the trailer and I looked at the little guy. I looked back at Zero, who was hiding. I said to the little guy, will you shut up? And the time started shaking and he was laughing and we became friends.
Oh, wow. But
that's a good one.
He was that is
interesting,
a good one.
Interesting man.
We had his son on this show. We had Josh Mostel.
Oh.
Yeah. We're both Zero fans.
Yeah.
I loved him. I really loved him. Did you ever see his paintings? He was a wonderful painter.
I never did.
That's how he worked his way through the blacklist. He had to sell.
Yeah.
He could work nightclubs, some cabaret stuff. But he couldn't be in films, couldn't be on major networks.
A professor of mine in film school was actually was roomed with Zero, and they were blacklisted together. A man named Arnaud Dussault.
Hmm.
And, we've talked, the blacklist comes up a lot on this show. We just talked about it with Lee Grant.
Oh,
my God. Yeah.
Great part of her life.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Wow.
And it's funny because when the Hot Rock came out, it was like the two new guys. I mean, everybody knew Redford and Siegel, but the two new guys were you and Paul Sand.
Yeah.
And it was so much fun to watch the both of you.
Oh, thank you.
Terrific heist movie. Peter Yates, right?
Peter Yates.
Yeah.
He had just done Bullet, I guess.
Yeah.
An interesting choice. We actually went up in the helicopter. There was a camera there, and the doors were off. But you were in a... I was terrified. I was a Jewish kid. We do not go up in helicopters with open doors. I guess the Israeli army does, but I didn't want... And they were building the World Trade Center then. And one of the shots was the helicopter going up, flying outside the World Trade Center. So it's imprinted in my... And when that horrible day happened, I said, oh, my God, I brought all of that back. It was fun. It was fun to make the movie. And it should have been more successful. It was a wonderful story that the old man, Daryl Zanuck, ran the studio, Fox, and he was booted out by his son. What's his son's name?
Oh, Richard Zanuck.
Richard.
Yeah, the Jaws producer.
So this was Richard's movie. Richard wanted to do this. So when Richard took over the studio, this was his film. Just before the film was going to open, the father came back into power and threw Richard out and threw the movie out, too. Redford called me once from Boston. He had a piece of the film. He said, we just opened with not one commercial on television and nothing in the papers except the reviews.
What a shame. It's such talent.
It could have been a much more successful. It's a very funny movie.
It's highly regarded today.
And is it Moses Gunn?
Moses Gunn, yeah.
Yeah.
He's like an African.
Sure. Oh, William Goldman wrote the script. And Quincy
Jones. In fact, I even remember the theme song.
Of course you do.
Yes. Dun, dun, dun. Dun, da, 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 da. Dun, 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 da, 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 da.
Ron is staring at him.
You've not been in many musicals, I think.
He does this on the show. He remembers, he recalls old theme songs.
In fact, another theme song I remember. Well, now, both of you worked with Sidney Lumet.
Yes.
Twice I worked with
him. She worked with Sidney twice, yes.
What was it like, what both of your recollections?
Well, Gilbert loves Bye Bye Braverman.
Yeah, speaking of George Siegel.
That's right.
An amazing cast in that movie.
Yeah, yeah. George and Joseph Wiseman and
Sorrel Book.
What a great memory.
Oh, when they get old, it's so sad. You know, Alan King.
Yes.
That's right. He was the rabbi.
Alan King, Zora Lampert.
Right. Yes.
Phyllis Newman.
But let's see. There was, Jack Warden.
And Jack Warden.
Jack Warden, right. Yes. Sidney loved Jack. He used him in many, many movies. And after that, I did the group. No, actually, I did the group first, and then I did. And you know, I was a replacement in Bye Bye Braverman. He called me. He said, Bubby. He called me Bubby. Bubby, I need a favor. You know, it was a cameo role. He said, oh, I shouldn't tell the story, should I? Well,
You want me to tell?
No.
Because I don't give a damn. I'm retired. I couldn't care.
Doesn't care.
Anyway, let's just say for reasons unknown, I replaced Maureen Stapleton in that role. I can't say.
You're very similar in type.
And I thought it was so strange.
Right.
I thought it was so strange because I was like 26 years old. You know, and we're not exactly the same type, but what an honor to replace Maureen Stapleton.
Right.
She's a wonderful actress.
Sure.
And I remember with Bye Bye Braverman, it was, have you seen Braverman dancing? He was the king of the ball.
Oh, my God.
Whirling and twirling and prancing, doing the Braverman waltz. Da 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 da.
Yes.
Da,
oh my da, God.
Da 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 da.
Brilliant.
Da 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 da.
I like the lyrics.
Da 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 da. Bum bum.
Oh my God!
This is why you're doing this show. Yeah. It gives you the opportunity
That's right.
to sing.
Absolutely.
Could you do "Rockabye Your Baby" with a Dixie melody?
Oh my God!
You figured him out.
That's impressive.
Yes. Rockabye my baby.
Sounds like Jerry.
Yes.
With a Dixie melody.
You know, yeah. Wait, I have to tell
and
you something.
You sing,
Ron does Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin together.
Jerry.
Listen to this.
I want to talk loud. You're going to have to hold it down, Jerry. You don't want to hear this.
Yeah, we do.
I could do Renee Taylor and Joe Bologna talking.
Ronnie, do Cary Grant.
I can only do Cary Grant sneezing.
Yeah.
Want to hear Cary Grant
sneezing? Yes.
I actually did this on The Tonight Show because I had Frank Gorshin was on. And I said, I feel so out of it, I need to do an impression. Johnny, would you like to hear Cary Grant sneezing? And he looked at me strange, and I went, off choo choo choo.
We will return to Gilbert Gottfried's amazing, colossal podcast, but first, a word from our sponsor.
And now back to the show. Do a little Jerry for Ron.
Yeah, do Jerry.
Yeah, he's got a great beat. Yes. He does a great one.
Let's hear it.
Oh, it's a thing with the patient and the high, and he's walking with the hover high in the hole.
Oh, very good. Bravo.
It's good Ron didn't do it. We don't want to follow that.
Yes.
You can't follow that.
No, you can't.
You and me, we're going to be partners. You and me, we're going to be pals.
When was the last time you were asked about Bye Bye Braverman in an interview, Jessica? It's been a while, huh? He brought it up maybe the fourth show we did.
I can't get over it. I'm so impressed. Oh. I don't think anyone's ever asked me.
There you go.
But it was a good movie.
It's one of those films that Sidney Lumet himself admits was not a perfect film. But it's one of those when it's on TV, I have to watch it. It's one of those films that grabs me each time. Bye Bye Braverman is way up there on that list.
Oh,
of films.
I'm so glad you think so, because I sure enjoyed the experience.
We've talked about Lumet a lot on this show. We've talked about The Verdict.
Yes.
We've talked about you're a big fan of The Pawnbroker.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, who isn't?
Yeah.
The Group.
Have you seen
The Group?
Sure.
The Group was good.
Sure. You were Libby.
I was Libby in The Group. And the advertisement was I just knocked the microphone. Libby with a big red scar for a mouth. They had like the eight girls like in a little horseshoe, each picture, and that was my title.
And I remember they used to say the biggest star in a Sidney Lumet film was New York.
Right. Yeah, true.
Absolutely.
He
knew how to film New York. It was an amazing thing.
Well, they're like time capsules. You go back and I just watched Dog Day Afternoon, and you go back and watch them.
Oh, my God,
and you really see the city. Yeah. Pawnbroker 2.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Dog Day Afternoon. And Bye Bye Braverman.
Serpico.
Yes, Serpico.
We were all over Bye Bye Braverman. They were all over the place.
Yeah.
Cemetery in Queens.
And speaking of The Group,
yes.
Didn't Mr. Eastwood see you in The Group and decide that you were...
You know, they wanted the studio. It was Universal. They wanted Lee Remick because they owed her pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And... He told me that later. But anyway, he just felt he had seen The Group. And actually, he was looking at somebody else in The Group. I won't say who.
Not Maureen Stapleton.
No. No. She wasn't in it. No.
I know.
But he thought I would be right from seeing
Libby. Was Playing Misty for me, and this is trivia I just found doing a little, and I hope this is true, was it based on an incident that happened to Gene Shepard, the radio host? You know Gene Shepard?
Yes,
of course. I remember him very well.
No, I think it was...
Is that erroneous information?
I think that's erroneous. It was written by a woman named Jo Himes.
Yeah, Jo Himes.
I've never heard that it was related to Gene Shepard.
Interesting.
No.
Now, the actress, Brenda Vaccaro.
Oh, she introduced us.
Oh, yes. That's what I'm bringing.
Yes.
You know, from Midnight Cowboy and a bunch of films.
The best.
I heard she pretty much forced two together.
She said, go out with Chinese with Ron, with us, with her husband at the time. You don't have to marry him. So, of course.
She came to Australia. I was doing a film in Australia.
Well, not she, me.
The kid over here.
because we're talking about Brenda.
Beautiful girl.
But let me just say this before that. Is that Brenda and Ron, this is good trivia. Brenda and Ron were doing Zorro the Gay Blade.
Oh, yes.
In
oh.
Mexico. And for Christmas break, you know, he lived in New York, but it was closer to stay. She invited him to her house and to stay there. And she always had a huge Christmas party, you know, with 800 of her closest friends. So she invited Ron and she invited me. I came with my whole family that was visiting from the East, blah, blah, blah. And we hello and goodbye. Nothing happened. And then she called and she said, you must go out with Ron.
And we started talking on the phone.
On the phone.
You would call her like at 5 o'clock every day and I would pick up knowing it was you. It was a way to get to know you. And we became
Didn't you run up a crazy high phone bill because you were talking long distance?
No, we weren't long distance. That was in Australia.
Australia.
All the phone bills in Australia.
Yeah. Oh. She used to call me in Australia, and she would, for $42,000 a minute, she would say, do Walter Brennan talking to Gary Cooper.
Do it, Roddy. Okay. This is great.
Now, you've all heard Walter Brennan.
Yes. Of course.
But you've not heard him talking to Gary Cooper.
No.
Hey, boy. Hey, Doonshun. Okay, Pop. It's not a big call for
would
him.
That be the Westerner or Pride of the Yankees?
Good.
That's great.
But she wouldn't leave the two of you alone until you got married.
She was like... very instrumental in, she's a wonderful person and a great friend. And I said, that's the best thing you ever did for me, was introducing me to Ron and pushing it.
She did.
This is a story about Australia, which he was about to tell. he went to do Farlap in Australia.
Oh, yeah.
And he invited me to go. Now, I had been in Australia twice. Once for the Love Boat, we did the real cruise.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, 2-hour Love Boat. And once a year they did like a real cruise.
Yeah.
So we did the Fiji Islands and we ended up in Sydney. And the second time was a pilot. Oh, was that later? Aaron's Way in Adelaide. But anyway, so she said, I said, Ron invited me to come to Australia. I said, but, you know, it's the other end of the earth. What do I need this for? She said, you will go. It is an investment in your life. She was right.
And wasn't there a clunky proposal, Ron? I read somewhere there was, you referred to it as a Jerry Lewis proposal.
It was.
Oh, that's how I referred to it. It was a proposal on New Year's Eve in my New York apartment. She was still living in California. I never gave up my New York apartment because I didn't like it.
We still live in it.
Oh,
it's been remodeled a little bit. But anyway, I was in a very long white bathrobe. I'd taken a bath. And she was seated in the living room. And my plan was to get down on one knee and then put out the little box in my hand and open the box and offer her the ring and ask her to marry me. So I tripped on the front of my bathroom. Hey, lady! Went right into her. I just humiliated myself. I was so nervous. And I said, and you can do the punchline.
I'll do my part.
And the box was still in my hand and I was shaking. I said, will you marry me?
And she said... I said, if I say yes, can I see what's in the box?
Nice.
That was 33 years ago.
Yeah. Wow.
30. Yeah,
we just celebrated 33 years.
Congratulations.
Oh, my God.
Thank you.
Yeah. We've both been married before. So between us, we have about 110 years of marriage. But this is it.
No more, huh?
No,
the second time around, it's true. It's better for us anyway.
And now you've worked with George Segal a few times.
A lot.
Me too.
A lot.
Yeah.
Both of you.
You too. That's right.
Yeah. Where's Papa?
Oh, Ron. My God. That's right.
Sure.
Both of you.
George.
And Jessica did a sitcom with him.
Yes, that's right. I did a sitcom and something else.
I don't know, but I called him up one day and I said, I can't get rid of you. Get out of my life.
George is one of our dream guests for this show.
Oh, I bet he would love it. He would love to
Woody,
do it.
Woody, we'd love to have him.
Tell him not to bring the banjo or you'll never get a word in.
That's fine. That's fine.
Oh, George and his banjo. Leave me alone with the banjo.
I used to love him playing the banjo on the Carson show.
You know, he even played the banjo on Retired at 35.
Yeah, I remember.
We got that in there.
It's probably in his contract.
Oh, yeah.
aesthetic.
I heard that the reason he would bring the banjo on those talk shows was it was very stressful for him to do the talk shows.
It is for everybody, usually, yeah.
And except here.
Felt like when he played the banjo, he was doing a performance of a guy having a great time.
What an interesting thing to say.
Yeah.
That's an acting moment. Yeah.
I don't want George to think we're sucking up to him, but I have to say, for a guy that could do drama and comedy.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, and anything.
Absolutely great.
You know, and films like A Touch of Class and No Way to Treat a Lady. Mm.
And just yesterday, Brother Rat.
Brother Rat, yeah. I mean, real range and funny.
A lovely guy, too. A really, really lovely person.
I love even little films that people don't talk about, like The Duchess and the Dirtwater Fox. You know that film? It's very good.
He's the reason I was always working in theater and I hadn't done no film. And he came, we were friends, he came to see where an off-Broadway play I was doing. And he brought Carl Reiner with him.
Oh.
And Carl came into my dressing room with George and I said, would you like to play George's older brother in a movie? And he laid the script on my dressing room table, Where's Papa? And that's how I started making movies, because of George.
Sidney Hochheiser, George's brother. We were just watching a little bit of it. Frankie, do you have any of the Where's Papa thing? This is a great moment.
Sidney!
Gladys, he sounded crazy.
He is crazy, and she's crazy.
Mom, Sheldon's hitting!
No hitting! Let him throw her out the window already.
Mom, Daddy's fighting!
No fighting! You know, Sidney...
Gladys, move.
You know you're crazy, too?
Move.
I think you like getting mugged every night.
Will you move?
No. Not tonight, Sidney.
I said move.
Get out of here, you...
No.
Mom, Gladys, they're kicking me!
Get away from that door. I'm going to choke your child.
You know who that child was?
No.
Who?
Mel Brooks' kid.
Are you kidding? Max Carl, Brooks?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
He's now Max Brooks.
How about that?
Carl loaned him. From Mel. No, it was. I didn't know.
That movie, I mean, Gilbert and I talk about black comedies that they don't make anymore. It's very hard to make a comedy that dark.
And
never
saw the original ending, which was much darker.
Yes, there was a different ending.
Yes, when he went to see her in the old age home and she said, where's Papa?
Right.
And he said, Papa's home. And he started to get into bed with her. This they cut. There was nothing said. He could have just laid down next to her.
Right.
But the response to it was so negative from people. Obviously, they had problems, these people. And so they changed the ending. I always thought the other ending was more apropos of the film, however.
It turns a little sad in the end, too, with Sorvino is running that the old folks' home.
Can't you see I'm saving luncheon?
Right. Right. But the scene where you try to make it through the park... When you're,
I can't say the name of the guy who was chasing.
Oh, you could say it on this show.
You can?
Yeah, sure.
Well, his name was Motherfucker.
Right. Did you remember, Gil?
Motherfucker, not tonight. Yeah. Please, Motherfucker, not tonight. Please don't take my clothes off tonight.
And the second time you go through in the ape suit. Yeah. It's a hilarious movie. And they really don't make comedies that dark anymore. Imagine a joke where the guy's choking his child to get his wife to move away from the door. So good.
And I saw this quote from the playwright Tony Kushner, and he says of you, of Ron, he is brave and theatrical in a way that no other stage actor is.
That's true.
How do I respond to that?
Will you do more of your Jerry and Dean?
Yes.
He's working you over, Ron.
See, I played you a compliment.
You know, it's true because
that's very lovely.
Ron and I did Tartuffe in L.A. at the LATC, and I was Elmire, and he was Tartuffe. And after one rehearsal, I said to him, I said, is there nothing you will not do for a laugh? I mean, it was so. I said, are you seriously considering doing what? And tell him what it was, the thing with the shoelace.
You have to really see it.
You can explain it.
You can't explain it. You have to see it. You don't have any television cameras here. No. Okay.
All right. Well, I tried.
I'll do it for us.
I was supposed to rape her on a table. Tartuffe
supposed to rape
the lady of the house on a table under which the husband is hiding. It's a great Molière moment. So all through rehearsal, she would have on capizios to push me away with her foot, or she would have on sneakers to push me. And came the dress rehearsal, and she had these long laced boots, which I had never seen. And it was a dress rehearsal where there also was an audience, but we had never done it in full costume. So she put her leg up, and I saw these long laces, and I untied them, and I licked them from top to bottom. It was the first clitoral joke ever done downtown Los Angeles. And you know what? It worked. I swear to God it worked, or we wouldn't have ever done
it
again.
That's great.
Yes.
They used that picture in the ad. They used the picture of you licking the shoelace in the ad. Anyway.
And Frank sent me a note last night because he knew I'd be excited by this.
Yeah.
You played Shylock in Merchant of Venice.
At the Public Theater.
Can I ask you to do some of Hath Not a Jew Eyes?
I don't remember. My memory is gone. That's why I'm teaching. I only speak the truth here.
If we got you any of it.
I'll tell you the truth. I was a prostitute in Chicago. You didn't know that. There's all kinds of stuff I could tell you.
What was Ruth Gordon like before we jump off Where's Papa, Ron?
She was very quiet.
She's a legendary performer.
Yeah, she was our mother. Ruth Gordon played George and our mother.
Yeah, and Where's
mother.
Papa?
Yeah. I can't really say anything. She was there, but she didn't really talk a lot, and she was a wonderful actress. She was just a wonderful. Remember when she won the Academy Award at 80?
Yeah, she was 72.
Was it Rosemary's Baby?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was Best Supporting Actress. And she said, this was her speech, I must say this is very encouraging.
Oh, that's funny.
She was 72 years
but
old.
We never knew if she was serious or if she was kidding.
Well, she was kidding, obviously.
Well, I've got the Shylock speech here. If you want to
for God's sake.
I don't remember it.
I'll do it. No, no.
I swear.
We have it on the phone.
You want to take a look and see?
Just do one line.
Yes.
Listen, he gave you Walter Brennan.
I know.
What the hell do you want?
And Gary Cooper.
And Gary Cooper.
Can you do Walter Brennan as Shylock?
Yeah. Has not a Jew eyes.
I want to ask Jessica, and we'll keep it moving, but I want to ask Jessica a little bit more about Play Misty for me.
Oh, which that was such a great role.
Which I watched last night again, and I mean I've seen it many times. It's a terrifying character, but there's a lot of depth to the character. I mean, you manage to make she's not a garden variety psycho. You manage to make her both seductive and sympathetic.
Oh,
which must have
I
been
so.
no small feat.
Well, you know, I just thought of her as the girl next door. I never thought of her as crazy or psychotic.
Yeah,
I think that was the key. That it was really, she had to have this man or die. It was that simple.
Right.
It's kind of like an early Fatal Attraction.
Yeah, I mean, Fatal Attraction owes a lot to it.
Yeah, it was. It exactly
was the first.
It was.
I mean, she's unstable, but you feel sorry for her.
Oh, I'm glad.
And she loves poetry. I mean, she loves Errol Garner, obviously.
It's the trick of playing villains is to get the audience to have sympathy for them.
Is to find their vulnerability. See, that was the vulnerability. No. If she didn't have this man, she would die.
Right.
That's a strong goal.
I've heard you say, too, that you like playing bitches better than the Miss Vanilla Ice Cream characters.
Yes, yeah. I've said that. It's true. You know, first of all, you have a much longer career if you're not playing little sweet sea ingenues.
Right, right.
And I remember I once went up for a John Wayne movie. I forget which one. But anyway, his son was the producer, Patrick.
Yeah, Patrick Wayne.
And I was so sure I would get it, everything. And I didn't meet John Wayne, but I met Patrick and the director, whoever that was. And then it came back, the feedback was, we don't see her as the gal, you know, standing at the gate while he runs off into the sunset with the horse. We don't see her as that kind of gal. I never got those sweetie parts.
Good. Thank goodness.
I know. Well,
they're boring.
Yet I saw you in a Western clip of an episode called The Name of the Game.
Oh, my God.
With Warren Oates, where you wrestle a woman.
Oh, I don't remember that clip. Oh, my God.
It's on YouTube. People can find
it. But you know something?
It.
I also wrestled a woman in a thing called Women in Chains. It was a movie of the week. And Ida Lupino was the warden. And I was
Ida
her helper.
Ida Lupino, wow.
And that woman, Joyce, the blonde woman who was married to this...
Joyce Van Patten?
No, no, we know Joyce.
Oh, we
no,
love
no, she was... Anyway, I wrestled her. So I've wrestled a couple of dames.
Gilbert just perked up.
Yes. Yeah. If you can make me a clip of this in a
room. I'd like to watch that myself.
Oh, my God.
And you're like one of those actors who, with millions of movies, TV shows, stage productions, if you show a picture of you, they're going to go, oh, that's that guy from Friends.
Yeah, Dr. Green. Everybody says that, oh, we know you from Friends.
That just tells you what the power of television. And,
quality problems.
I didn't even want to do it when they asked me. But our daughter said, oh, you got to do it. You got to do it. I got to meet those kids. You got to meet those kids.
We got to do it.
So she pushed me into it. I wasn't going to do it.
Oh, wow.
I'm a very difficult person. You've probably seen that by now.
She made me do Joni Loves Chachi.
Oh, wow.
That's right. You did Joni Loves Chachi.
I said, Joni Loves Chachi. I said, oh, Mom, I'll be so good. It'll be on the block. Everybody will be talking about it. It was a big hot show with kids.
There is no show you didn't do, Jessica.
That's quite true.
Oh, tell them about the blue lighting.
Oh, you remember, was it Universal that had
Universal
this blue
and Paramount
kind of
too.
Lighting in film? Anytime that comes up, honey, you're on.
The blue lighting on all those shows,
blue
Maddox.
Blue lighting.
Oh,
Barnaby
interesting.
It's a little tint. It probably was cheap, is what.
Probably.
Cheap film.
Wasn't Day for Night, was it? They were just.
No,
it
just had, there was a certain lighting of those 70s. Shows.
I was doing research for the show, and we knew you'd done a lot of stuff. But I said to Gilbert, there wasn't a cop show or a detective show or a medical show between 1965 and 1985 that you didn't do.
I was really lucky.
I mean,
I really was to work all the time.
Yeah. Cannon, Vanacek, McLeod, Quincy, Mannix, Columbo, Cannon, Alias Smith and Jones, which
we talked with
the late Pete Duell. And Mission Impossible and the Immortal. And I mean, it just...
Yeah, a lot of movies a week.
And a lot of movies of the week. Yeah.
Black Market Baby.
I thought I was marrying a high-class girl. Her father played with the NBC, played under,
that's right.
Under Toscanini, and I thought I was... And on a honeymoon, what is she reading? I figured Pride and Prejudice. She's reading the June Allison story.
Those books.
Me too.
I love those books.
Me too. We read a lot of them for this show. Tell us a little bit about Amy Prentice, which was a spinoff of Ironside.
Ironside. Yeah. Well, it was a 2-hour Ironside, and it was not meant to be a pilot, but they liked the character.
Wasn't it one of the NBC mystery
movies? Yeah, it was in that wheel.
Yeah. The wheel.
They called it the wheel. And I got a call one day from my agent. He said, "Are you sitting down?" I said, "Ooh, what?" That they want to do it as a series in the wheel, like 2-hour shows or an hour and a half. So we did. It didn't last, but
right. You did. What did you do? 4 of them, and you won an Emmy.
We did 4 2-hours. Yes, I did. Win an Emmy
with Art Matrano, Gil.
I love him. The best.
Our friends Frank DeCaro and Jim Colucci are here, and they're loving these references.
I love Art.
You don't hear an Art Matrano reference every day, do you, Jim? And Helen Hunt played your daughter.
Helen Hunt, it was her first job.
Yeah.
Oh, she was 9
God.
Years old.
Yeah.
Wow.
9 years. And I knew then she was going to be special. There was something about her.
And Ron, you were Jennifer Aniston's father.
Yes, and she sends me no money.
Yeah. But the resemblance between the two of you is uncanny.
Thank you.
I'm getting an erection.
Oh, my God.
I'll be thinking about you tonight.
What is an erection?
He really is.
You'll tell me later.
Ronnie.
I love Jennifer. I love Jennifer and David. Most of my stuff was with Jennifer and David. And I enjoyed it, yeah. I said, God, you people work hard. I've pretty much stayed away from television as much as I could because I love the rehearsal process that you have in the theater. I love those 4 weeks of discovery and finding stuff and inventing stuff. And you don't get that in weekly television. You learn your lines and you're thrown up there.
I just did a play.
Tell us about it. Tell us about
Sorry,
it.
Sorry, sweetie.
No, that was great timing.
Well, but we only had 2 weeks rehearsal. That's why I thought of it. For Bucks County Playhouse.
Yeah, what you did Steel Magnolias?
We did Steel Magnolias with Susan Sullivan and
Tricia
Richardson.
Yeah.
It was such a great... And Marcia Mason directed.
Wow, Marcia Mason. Glad to see her around.
The most wonderful person.
Oh, we love Cinderella Liberty.
Yes.
And The Goodbye Girl.
James Caan.
Correct.
I just did a movie with James Caan. As a matter of fact, Frank... Didn't we just do the ADR for James Caan movie?
Frankie Verderosa.
Did we work on that?
Wasn't it you last week?
It may have been the other Frank.
No, it was you.
It was me? Okay.
Yeah.
It
was like five lines for ADR for Operation Insanity with James Caan.
I remember Cinderella Liberty. One of our guests was Paul Williams. Who wrote the theme song?
That's right.
Do it for us.
Okay.
Oh, don't encourage him, Jessica.
You're very kind, Jessica. You're very kind.
Too kind.
Hello. What a simple way to start a love affair. Should I jump right in and say how much I care? Would you take me for a madman or a simple-hearted clown? Hello, with affection from a sentimental fool through to a little girl who's broken every rule. One that brings me up when all the others seem to let me down.
I cannot believe this.
Did you ever hear anybody do
How
Paul
long
Williams?
Is his contract with this show?
It's just been terminated.
This is it. This is the final
We're here
show,
for the last show.
Germs.
He does a great Paul Williams, but we had John Byner on the show, and John, they did matching Paul Williams or dueling Paul Williams.
We sang really a duet back and forth. It was so much fun.
Now, you won an Emmy for Amy Prentice, and it got canceled, and this leads me to Ron, winning. And speaking of winning Emmys for canceled shows, tell us about Cass.
It ran one season, and then I won the Emmy Award, and I thank CBS for the opportunity.
Television is strange that way.
It was awfully strange, and I knew nothing about television, but I had this contract with CBS, and I was working in the theater, and they said, well, you got to do something. We keep paying you. So I wrote the idea.
Well, he had a deal with CBS. We don't say contract, we say deal.
Oh.
So people understand. Sorry, sweetie.
So what did you want to know about?
I love the back and forth that they have worked out.
So the show got on the air. Oh, I know, because I didn't know anything about television. And there come the first Sunday night, it was on.
It's about an ex-con who becomes an attorney.
Ex-con, which is possible in certain states.
Mm-hmm.
And... it was really a Les Miserables story that his past kept following him, all the negative people from his past, and he was trying to change his life. I always found that an interesting subject. And what was my point?
You didn't have a good experience. Well, you co-wrote the show, and you co-created the show.
I think the idea was that we only get Emmys for canceled shows.
Yeah.
We've been nominated for other Emmys, and they were successes.
Isn't that interesting?
We didn't win them.
And you were in a movie that's popped up on this podcast for all the wrong reasons.
Oh, you're going for it, huh?
Yes.
Oh, I told him about that.
Which one?
Up the Academy?
Yes.
Oh, you were warned.
And I should warn the audience, this is not one of those so bad it's good. It's just plain bad. Now, so in that movie, you actually had your name taken off it.
It was a different script when I originally agreed to do it. You know who the director was?
Robert Downey Sr.
Yeah, Bob Downey.
Of all people.
Who you liked.
I loved him. We were in this together. But then, just before we began shooting, they presented a totally different script. And they put what me worry character from
Alfred E. Newman. Yeah,
I said this is not what I signed on for. I thought of myself as a little classier than that fool that I was. And I said, well, I'm going to take my name. They wanted my name above the title at that point in my career. And I said, you're going to have to take it off, or I'm not going to do the film. And I said, well, what billing do you want? I said, let me see the film when we put it all together. And I had an idea it wasn't going to be wonderful. You know, Bob Downey Jr. was in it.
Oh, yes.
He didn't have any lines, but his father threw him in there.
There was a lot of talent in the picture. Tom Poston was in it.
And not only did you have your name removed, but there was a statue of Alfred E. Newman in the movie that Mad Magazine had removed.
Oh, I didn't know.
We had
great.
We had a couple of editors here from Mad Magazine a few weeks ago, and William M. Gaines, the publisher of Mad, also paid something like $350,000 to have Mad's name removed. Or it wasn't that Mad's name was removed, but they removed all visual references to the mascot.
That's a bad film.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dear me. The Sky is Falling.
That was a play Ron was in, Dear Me, the Sky is Falling.
My first Broadway play.
Oh, wow.
Dear Me, the Sky is Falling.
Oh, tell the story. Tell the story. This is a great one.
She's no longer with us. She loved to control. She had a real control thing. And it didn't happen to me. She had a big stomach. And she used to turn sideways and make hand gestures where she wanted the actors to move. The audience couldn't see her hand. And we opened in New Haven, and she got a big laugh, and it was an actor named Michael Bazleon who was on stage with her. She wouldn't have done this with me because she knew I was nuts already, so she wouldn't have tried me. But the audience laughed in a place she didn't expect, and she said to him, don't move, they're laughing, don't move. It's dying now, you walk across the stage. She's doing this under her breath.
Speaking of control.
You don't like a ventriloquist.
How would you like somebody doing it?
Oh.
No, she didn't do it with me. She had me fired every other day, and then the producer kept rehiring me. So.
I want to say one positive thing about Up the Academy, befriend. This is the New York Times. The New York Times raved about Ron's performance. Vincent Canby said, "Ron Liebman is magnetic in the role."
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I found this while digging.
Put your name back on, quick.
And I found another review where they referred to the eternally marvelous Ron Liebman.
Oh.
So there you go.
I never read these things.
I'll send them to you.
Another thing is about reviews. When they're awful, they last forever. And if you're in a play and they're wonderful, they always pick a moment they liked. And if you read that, that moment is gone the next night. Because what you're thinking of is the review rather than what produced that wonderful moment.
You want to repeat that review, basically, I guess.
It's in your head. You can't get it out of your head. So don't read reviews.
Yeah.
Sing.
I've heard actors say that in stage plays, that they'll get a review on one line they do.
It'll never be the same.
Yes.
Yeah, it'll never be as fresh or as what attracted the critic in the first place. So best to read them when the play closes.
Or not at all. Or have people like you tell Ron how wonderful he was.
I never read those reviews. Thank you for the...
I'll dig it out for you. Well, as long as we're torturing Ron, do we want to bring up, and he brought it up himself.
Yes.
Before we turned the mics on, we had mentioned that Bruce Dern had done the show, and then Ron said, I did a movie with Bruce Dern. And it's a movie that has come up on this show before.
Wonton Tom, the dog who saved Hollywood.
That's the one.
And I played Rudolph Valentino, whose name wasn't Rudolph Valentino in the movie. It was Rudy something or other.
I think it was Rudy Montague.
Rudolph Montague. Wonderful that you remember that.
And he did research, Ronnie.
The character used to...
It's not all up there.
You really work. This guy sits here and sings his pathetic song.
Exactly.
And he does all the work. Why don't you try singing a little bit?
I was hired for my voice.
Rock-a-bye, your baby, without Dixie melody.
So what was the point about Juan Ton Ton?
Juan Ton Ton, the dog who said, I met Madeline Kahn on that.
That's
on
a
that
great
movie.
Cast.
I met Terry Garr on that movie. We had it, and I like Bruce very much. And we were both members of the Actors Studio, and we said, what the hell are we doing in this movie?
Well, Phil Silvers and Art Carney you also acted with in that film.
I have no memory
of Juan Ton Ton. I mean,
there were a lot of people.
Everyone.
Zsa Gabor was in there.
Yeah. The Ritz Brothers. John Carradine. Johnny Weissmuller. God. Yeah, Rudy Valli.
Harry Ritz,
yeah,
who was the lead of the three Ritz Brothers who played the mountains and cabarets, was the guy they all stole from. Where Jerry goes, Harry Ritz was doing that first, making those funny
interesting
sounds. And they all took for Jan Murray told that story once. Everyone
wow
stole from Harry Ritz. And I got to see them. I can't do it because we're not on television. But why they were so funny when they'd sing, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, putting on the Ritz. And Harry Ritz would see a girl and he would step and they'd have to pull him back. The next time they went around the stage, he'd go, to pull him back. And finally he went,
there's a little Charlie Callis in there, too. You remember Charlie Callis?
I do,
indeed.
Of course.
Sure, he used to do those kind of sounds.
If you ever saw Martin and Lewis, my parents were nightclub people. They loved to go to nightclubs, and they just loved to go to the Copacabana. And I never understood why he always got a table put down in front, because he was in the clothing business. But his partner was not in the clothing business.
Oh.
You see? So we got, and I got to see Martin and Lewis in their native habitat, which is where they began, in Jersey, in the Copacabana, live. Martin and Lewis live was something to behold. I know it wasn't classy. I know it wasn't sophisticated, but it was funny.
Who did you miss in the Copa? Wink, wink.
Oh, I was just going to get to that.
My wife was a Copa girl.
Did you lie about your age to become a Copa girl?
I did, yeah.
Tell us
yeah
about that.
Well, you know, tell me, I think it was 1957 or so. Anyway, Luba Lisa, whose real name is Luba Gutnick, she was in the, well, we all went to...
Luba Gutnick. I love the name.
She became quite well known for a while before she tragically died in an airline crash at 26. But anyway, we went to Performing Arts High School, right? Two blocks away from here. One block. And she was in the dance department. I was in the drama department at PA. And we used to go home on the subway together, which was then the BMT. We would take the BMT to Queens Plaza. She'd get off. I'd go further into Astoria. Gilbert, you yes remember the BMT and all that stuff?
Oh, my
yeah
God, yeah.
Sure.
Anyway, so she said, oh, I'm going to go try out for the Copa. She was a dancer. She said, I'm going to try out for the Copa, and I'm so scared to go alone. Would you, like, go with me? I said, yeah, I'll go with you. So we go, and we go into the nightclub part, and there's a guy, you know, whatever, Luba walks across the stage. Well, I don't know. Anyway, and this guy says, so, girly, you, come on out here. It was really a guy with that kind of voice. And I said, well, I'm just here with a friend. He said, come on. So I walk across the thing. I have my school books in my arm. We didn't have backpacks in those days. And he said, you know, lift your skirt, of course, just above the knee in those days, you know. And I got the job. She never spoke to me again. Oh, my God.
And you became
I got the
Copa
job
girl.
Yes.
She was a Copa girl.
For the summer.
Wow. Was Jules Podell
yes
still
yes
around in those days?
Yes.
But it was the summer, so we had people like Ricky Lane in Belleville.
Oh, that's the
worst acting show
that's come up on this
that
show.
That is the worst. Ricky Lane in Belleville?
Well, Paul Schaefer was on one of
yes
our first shows,
they
and apparently
both spoke
they were big
the same
in Canada
way. How can you be a ventriloquist? How are you doing? How are you? I'm fine. How are you? Are you really fine? Yes, I am. It's the same voice for both the guy and the
right.
I didn't quite get it.
Yeah.
They didn't have their big
Ricky
big
Lane in Belleville.
Yeah, they didn't
oh
have
the
their
best
big
act.
Or Sullivan act.
Yeah, the great Ballantyne was a great
we
act
love
oh
Carl Ballantyne.
Oh, yes.
And he'd cut the tie up and put it in the hat
sure
and break an egg, and he'd bring it up back up, and it was a broken egg and a tie that was dripping, and he destroyed the guy's tie.
Yeah.
And never
returned
it. You
know, at the Copa, during the summer, they had, and it did not go over, Mort Saul.
Oh, wow.
Copa.
Wow.
That's the audience was
not
like,
a good
huh
booking.
Not a good booking, but the summer they were desperate.
Yeah.
I guess he was, too. I don't know.
I heard Carl Ballantyne, when he was really old, he would get up in the morning and, like, the garbage men would recognize him. And
what, from McHale's Navy and stuff?
Yeah, they go, "You're called Valentine. Can we have an autograph or take a picture with you?" And he goes, "Yeah, for $5. And they'd give him the $5, and he'd go to, like, a burger place and have lunch.
I always thought Art Matrano was a little bit, a little homage to Carl Ballantyne, because they both had the, well, Carl had the bad magic act, and Art had no act.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
None. Art just had the handkerchief.
You know, the thing about Art that people don't realize, well, they do if they've seen him in a dramatic show, he's a wonderful actor.
Wonderful actor.
Yeah. Wonderful.
He was on Kaz, too. He was wonderful.
Yeah.
Nice, nice.
I remember him in a short-lived series with Jamie Farr called The Chicago Teddy Bears. Anybody? And Marvin Kaplan. Remember Marvin Kaplan?
Marvin, of course.
We had him on the show a couple of weeks ago.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. My God.
He was very big with the Screen Actors Guild.
Yes. He's 90.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was terrific.
Terrific guest for us.
Oh,
you're a fan of old comedy, Ron. Someone told me you were a Lenny Bruce fan, too.
Oh, major.
So was George Hamilton, which was a big surprise. Wow. When we did whatever that was.
Zorro the Gay Blade.
Zorro
the Gay Blade. I thought George was going to be a jerk, a Hollywood jerk. He turned out to be the most sophisticated guy, and he turned out that Lenny Bruce is his favorite comedian. That takes a certain amount of sophistication, I think, because I love Lenny Bruce.
Now, you've never played in Lenny, I guess.
I was asked to do it in London, and I couldn't do it. I was doing something else, yeah.
It seems like it would have been a
perfect.
Yeah, yeah, perfect for you.
Cliff Gorman did it.
Yeah.
May he rest in peace.
Sure, Cliff Gorman. And then Dustin in the movie, Hoffman. Yeah. Can we ask you guys some questions that our fans sent us as we wind this down?
Absolutely.
And let you get on with your lives? God, this has been fun. I'm just going to run through a couple of these quick, Gil, if that's okay.
Yes.
Steve Camilli, I just saw Jessica on stage in Steel Magnolias. Can you ask her if she has a particular standout stage experience?
Hmm.
What's it?
Ron
is pointing
to him.
So.
Yes.
God.
I was her stage experience.
So many. I don't know. It's strange. There was one play I did, Photo Finish, with Peter Ustinov. I was very young, and I can't explain it. Very rarely when you're on stage, you have this kind of surreal, ethereal kind of experience where you're one with the audience, and it's like magic. I had a moment like that in that play.
Do you remember this piece of music? Frank, do we have this queued up by chance? This is speaking of Jessica in the theater.
I do. Stand by.
You might get a kick out of this.
Oh my God!
Why can't you behave?
Of course. Kiss Me, Kate.
Yeah.
That was Michael Callan.
You and Michael Callan. Is he still around?
I don't
remember. Michael Callan?
Oh, yeah.
Mickey Callan. Mickey Callan.
A
lot of work.
And look at the picture he's got going there from Grand Prix with an umbrella. Oh, my God.
We do deep research here.
We do.
God. You did that for television in the 60s?
Yes, Armstrong Circle Theater.
Wow.
Yeah, those were the days.
My goodness.
With Robert Goulet and Carol Lawrence were the...
Sure. Leads. They were married.
They were married, yeah.
Here's a question.
Julie Munchen.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, here's Gil. A question that I want to... Because both of you... are such experienced stage actors. What do you do? Do you ever have those moments where you've been on stage and you feel like, I just don't have a grasp of this? Like in some scene or the whole thing?
You mean it was off that night or you never had a grasp?
Yeah, well, like, yeah, some maybe off that night, or maybe if you never felt like the character was totally yours or anything like that.
Very little of that, because I was always very careful about what I would do. If I had no connection, I wouldn't do it. I just would turn it down, much to agents' chagrin, because they want you to do everything so they can make their 10%. But I wouldn't do a lot of stuff. You don't get a medal for that. It's just for me. Just for me. I don't preach it.
Yeah.
For young actors who I teach all the time now. No. No, but I sure have had those moments where you think you're flying, and there's nothing like it.
Mm-hmm. That's a good way to put it, Ronnie.
Like you're flying.
You're flying, absolutely flying.
On
very
stage.
Rare.
Wow.
I had that in Angels. I had that almost every performance because the writing of that character was so brilliant. And so, what of? We're talking about playing the nasty people. They're always more.
Yeah.
Isn't Iago more interesting than Othello? He is to me. And
for the record, I was the voice of Iago.
Oh my God!
Iago, the parrot.
Oh, I read that about you. We've researched you a little bit too, you know.
Now go back, Grant.
We have looked you up.
We Googled you.
And down.
Just to see if he was okay.
It's quite an interesting history.
We're very impressed with you, Gilbert.
Your childhood, you were influenced by comedy deeply, yes? It really hit your heart. My first realization that life I did not have a particularly happy childhood, and not unusual as actors go. But what saved my life was the Marx Brothers.
Oh, that's
nice to hear.
And people said they're surreal. I said, no, they're not surreal. That's reality, man. That's the reality I understand. Make that three hard-boiled eggs.
I didn't know he was such a gifted mimic. He really has. Yes. I haven't seen him do voices in movies. He's very good.
Yeah. You know, he's Ron Cadillac in Archie.
I know that. Yeah. But I haven't seen him. I didn't know he could do Walter Brennan and Groucho and Jerry.
It's pathetic, isn't it?
Gilbert got on stage at 15 for the first time.
Doing what?
I just some open mic night.
Oh, my God. What courage.
Yeah, or stupidity.
That's the courage. Yeah, you weren't stupid. I don't see you as a stupid kid.
No, you're not stupid.
You sing much too much, but...
You know,
I see you as a smart kid. I'm serious.
We've known each other a long time. And the first time I saw him on stage at a club called the Comic Strip, he was doing material about Ben Gazzara.
Oh, my God.
And Norman Fell. And I was one of those kids that read credits and watched. And I thought, who is this person that would get on stage? And I wondered how
good
many people.
For you.
Yeah. Really esoteric references.
He's a friend of mine.
And to this day, I still do imitations of John MacGyver.
Remember John MacGyver from Midnight Cowboy? He'll do the voice. You'll recognize
it. Do the voice.
Heavy set guy.
Yeah. He'd bald, heavy set. He'd usually be a pompous authority figure. And it was always, everything in this hotel must be run according to schedule.
Yes, I know it is. Absolutely know it is.
You should do an evening of obscure references.
John MacGyver.
Hour and a half.
We hardly knew ye. Here's one for Ron from Facebook. Ron was unforgettable in Super Cops and Norma Rae. How did he like working in Opelika, Alabama?
Opelika.
And he's played a lot of real-life characters. Has he ever met any?
Yeah, I met the guy in Super Cops who was a cop.
Oh, Greenberg.
Greenberg wound up in prison. That would have been a more interesting movie.
Like Super Cops. That's another one of those movies where you get to see old New York.
And Norma Rae... I met Marty Ritt, had a meeting with Marty Ritt, who should be on your list of wonderful directors.
Also blacklisted.
Yes. Sounder. He did The Long Hot Summer.
I love his work.
But I sat in his office and he said, I'm going to have to ask you to, I know your career is where it is, we don't have to ask you to audition, because if it doesn't work between you and Sally, we have no movie. It becomes a documentary about forming a union, and that's not a movie, that's a documentary. What a smart man. So I work with Sally. We never met each other, and it was one of those moments. We did a scene for them, and the chemistry, whatever you want to call it, it was there. And we have remained friends through the years.
You were the union organizer, right?
Yeah. I was the one out to get her and change her life. It was like the Pygmalion Galatea story. And it was wonderful. That was an experience that is... unforgettable, as Angels was in the theater, Norma Rae was. I'm a lucky guy. I just realized that.
Your Tony speech is very touching, by the way. Watched it. It's on YouTube.
Which is?
Your Tony acceptance speech for Angels. It's very short and sweet.
Thank you so much.
He thanked him for 563 producers.
I want to thank
the 563 producers.
I think I gave you 30 seconds.
Here's one for you, Jessica.
Yes.
Someone, Greg Pair, P-A-I-R, please ask Jessica about her turn as Morgan Le Fay in Marvel's Doctor Strange movie.
Oh, my goodness.
Any memories of that?
That's a... Well, I'll tell you, the memories. You know, I she comes back as, you know, 500 years old or something in the end, and I had to have that face mask that they do. They build the old age thing. It's like claustrophobic. What do they call that, Ron?
The life mask?
You know, a mask of you, and then they make it
A life mask.
It is a life mask.
I own a few of those of other actors.
And it was, I remember that. Gosh. They, like, you have to be put in plaster.
Plaster.
You know, and it dries on you. It's very frightening.
They've done it of me where they, like, put a straw.
Put a straw
so
you can breathe.
Yes. Yes. Oh,
and,
my God.
And you do. You are lying there, and you're going, even if you're not claustrophobic.
You become claustrophobic.
Yeah. It was, I remember that about it. And I thought it was a pretty good movie of the week. Now they're going to do it, I hear, as a movie.
They're doing it as a big budget movie, yeah.
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 I did that for Slaughterhouse 5 because the guy at the end... Lazaro.
Yeah, you were the psycho.
Yeah, he could get, once again, onto the breach, dear friends. And at the end of the movie, he's an old man, so I had to do that. Oh, that was scary.
But those people are real artists who do that, the makeup people.
Oh, my God. Oh.
These are the guys at Universal. Did you know he was at Universal? They had a whole department.
John Chambers. Yes, John Chambers.
That I can remember. I can't remember my name, what happened yesterday.
John Chambers, I think that's the makeup artist who that whole Argo incident was based on.
Yes,
where they went to the Middle East and said they were,
right.
That John Goodman played him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And since you both work for Lumet, which we talked about before, but we talked about the group, and I want to ask Ron about a good performance and as the DA in Night Falls on Manhattan.
Yes. He had seen me in Angels and wanted me to play this character. And I love working with him and Andy Garcia. If you ever have a sweet guy on, get Andy.
We'll try.
And talented.
What a lovely
man.
Lovely and
talented. We're trying to get
Dreyfus was in that.
Yeah.
Klinghoffer. He played Klinghoffer, right?
He kept pushing his glasses up.
Do the thing that you did.
I used to drive him crazy off camera. And it would swing around, and I'd be in the shot, and he was walking around there. I would stick a tissue in my nose. Camera didn't see it, but Dreyfus would see it. Just trying to shake some reality into his performance.
Stop it. He doesn't mean
I'm teasing, Richard.
Richard.
It's the truth.
I was in a show with Richard. We're changing the subject right now.
What did you do with him?
Victory at Entebbe.
Oh, sure. With Kirk Douglas and...
all those big stars.
Helen Hayes is
Theo
in that.
Theo Bacall, Helen Hayes.
Here's two last ones, quick ones.
Right.
Ron Lehman is unforgettable in a film called Your 3 Minutes Are Up.
Oh, my
with
God.
With Beau Bridges.
I would love to hear his thoughts on that one.
We became very close friends, and we had a hell of a time. It was an independent, small-budget film. And I fell in love with Beau. And then, of course, we did Norma Rae together. And then he asked me to do a movie that he was directing. So we worked together 3 times. That whole family is a wonderful family, the Bridges family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, really nice, good people. And we had a nice time. I don't know, have any strange memories. We just had a good time doing it.
Lloyd Bridges was in the Fiji, Australia love boat.
That's right.
I spent 2 weeks on a boat with him.
You're also
nice
in the you're also in the very first episode of Flipper, which is the trivia.
I was in the first episode of Flipper, and you want to hear the awful what they did? I thought
this is my new favorite episode.
I think it was the pilot of Flipper, but anyway. So we're out there on the sea, and the basis of the story was that a helicopter had dropped some medical stuff and it didn't hit the boat. It went down into the sea. So Flipper has to go find it and bring it up.
Okay.
So they have a helicopter, you know, and out comes the dolphin into the sea. And I said, oh, my God, that's so amazing. They said, well, he's a dead frozen dolphin.
Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah. Oh. Well, maybe I shouldn't have told that story.
Well, that's okay.
Well, you can make up for that story by telling Gilbert what Raymond Burr was really like.
Oh, I liked Raymond Burr.
We're fans.
Of what Raymond
Burr? Yeah.
You know, the best thing about when I would come home from Steel Magnolias It's in New Hope, Pennsylvania, and they don't the apartment that was offered had like three stations, and one of them is MeTV.
Oh,
out
which
of New
we've
Jersey.
Been, we've been watching it, yeah.
In
which
Jersey,
I love. And the station. Best thing, I'd come home, get home about 11:30, and watch Perry Mason on MeTV. Those were, I love those old shows.
Yeah.
We watch Columbo on Sunday nights.
Yeah, Sunday nights. MeTV is in Pound Ridge, where we have a country house, and we watch Columbo.
You find your episode?
We did once find my episode. They had it on.
You also did McLeod, McMillan and Wife, Tenafly.
Banachek,
Tenafly with James McEachin from Play Misty for Me.
The best.
Yeah, we brought these shows up
yes,
on here.
Yes, the Black TV Detective.
I was working off Broadway for $45 a week. I didn't know her then.
Right.
Oh, I didn't.
You worked arguably as much as any actress,
I
any
did.
Television
More.
Actress. And, yeah. Yeah.
I was very lucky.
Yeah.
It's not what, luck. You know, it's never luck. You
one of those
lucky.
Shows, the Robert Stack one, A Name of the Game. What was it called?
Oh my God! The Robert yes. Stack, yeah. The Untouchables.
No. It was in the mystery.
Yeah,
it was like in the late 60s.
There was the one with
Robert
Hutchins.
Stack.
Was there one with Robert Stack?
And the one with Tony
Curtis.
Tony Franciosa.
Robert
had
Stack
one.
Was the head of a publishing company.
I don't even remember that show.
Yeah,
Tony Curtis's was called McCoy.
It was right. called Name of the Game.
Oh, the Name yes, of the Game. Well, yes. That was Gene Barry and Tony Franciosa.
Right, and Robert Stack.
Oh.
Robert Stack was in one of those mystery movies or uh-huh. something. But my point was, so after the O.J. thing, I realized in that show, my character, of course, the bad girl, has to go into the – they had recreated a real San Quentin, the real San Quentin gas chamber. And they had two extras. One was a white guard and one was a black guard. That leads me into the gas chamber, and it was O.J.
Wow.
He was making extra money when he was going to USC.
He used to be an extra. And
he was an extra.
And
yeah.
I did the Bobby Vinton show. Remember? Da, da,
sure.
da, da, da.
Oh, yes.
Take it away.
Yes.
Take it away.
See, I don't know the words, but I remember it. Da, 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 da.
We had to encourage him.
Shouldn't have.
Oh my God!
But anyway,
so sorry.
So it was. We were. I was a guest. You know, I sang. I was a guest, and OJ was a guest because he was such a big star at the time. I forget when this was, like early 70s or something.
You danced with him,
and at the end, we all do the polka, da da da, and he was my partner. I have it on tape.
You did a
I danced with a murderer.
You did a polka.
You held the hand that held
a
the knife.
A polka with OJ, and I have it on tape.
Wowie.
What?
And how did we find it? Tell them how we found it.
We were looking for Shecky Green.
On the one.
She was on one of those talk shows.
We had Shecky here.
My Douglas show.
We had Shecky here.
Isn't he the funniest?
He and Gilbert had a little run-in.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Why? What happened?
I was at some Friars thing.
Yeah.
And out of nowhere, I do my set, and then someone else, he was supposed to follow me.
Right.
And then I found out that Joy Behar went, who wasn't supposed to be on, and she goes, boy, isn't that Shecky an asshole? And Shecky was like screaming about my set, saying, I was in the Navy. I never heard words like that. And he tried to throw a punch at like Stewie Stone or
Freddie Roman.
And it was
he had a little meltdown. But then we had him on the show.
And it was not much better.
No. He gave us about 20 minutes and hung up on us.
Oh, God.
And 20 minutes that you couldn't use one, really.
Oh, wow.
We used it. Funny guy.
But how we found out about the O.J. thing was we were looking for this interview that I had done on the Mike Douglas show and for the skit with Shecky.
We were looking for that skit,
and
which I had never seen, obviously.
And all of a sudden, Ron said, wait a minute. And this was right during the trial. Ron said, wait a minute.
Oh, my God.
Wait a minute. It's you and O.J. dancing the polka.
That's wild.
I had forgotten about it.
That is wild.
Oh, my God.
You can go to the Museum of Television and Radio and find some of those
Yes,
old,
you can.
Yeah, it's great.
You know, I had never seen Play Misty for Me. Uh-huh. I'd seen pieces of it on television, and we were dating. She said, well, why don't I put it on the VCR, and I'll go and make dinner in the kitchen. So I'm watching this thing, and she's killing about 1,100 people. And in the kitchen, I hear, she's chopping with a knife. I said, if you're going to leave, you will leave now.
I love that.
Oh, my God.
That is great.
Okay.
She only killed two people, to be fair.
Oh, okay. You know?
John Larch and...
The housekeeper.
Clarice. Yeah. Clarice Taylor.
Was that really you floating in the water at the end? Did you do your own stunt?
Yeah.
Wow.
I didn't fall from the cliff.
Sorry to give away the payoff.
Yeah. But, yeah.
If you haven't seen it by now.
I was game.
It's 1926 it was made, I think.
That, I have to just say, that as Ron said, Norma Rae was such an experience. That was a wonderful experience. Oh, yeah. Clint Eastwood, the best.
And Don Siegel is the bartender.
Yeah.
The great Don Siegel.
Yeah.
He had him around just in his self.
Yeah.
That was the first day of shooting, was that scene in the bar with Don.
As I said, you're so good in the film.
Oh, thank you. Where
you run the gamut.
Great role. You know, if it's, we have this saying, Ronnie and I, if it ain't on the page, it ain't on the stage. Just like with Angels, how brilliantly
like
it was written. It's sort of like with Archer. I mean, how he comes up with these
Adam
things.
Reed.
Adam Reed, he's so brilliant.
Yeah, he's very brilliant. Mm. You guys have done everything. This has been quite a ride. What do you think?
We've totally enjoyed it.
It's 112
now
degrees
in this room. Now let's all sing together. You remember the Breakfast Club when you were a kid? Good morning, Breakfast Clubbers. It's nice to see you. Another cheery greetings away we bring you. First call to breakfast. Philco's call to breakfast. Ba-da-bum.
We sing that to my best friend, Louise Sorrell. We sing that to her. We sing that to her. Every morning we call her and we wake her with that song.
It's hilarious.
Do you remember or you're too young for the Breakfast Club? Don McNeil and the Breakfast Club.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
I was going to try to get Ron to go for whatever it is I'm against it from Horse Feathers, since he loves the Marx Brothers so much.
Do you remember Don McNeil and the Breakfast Club?
No.
I can't say
he's
I do either.
Young.
Out of Chicago.
He's a young guy.
Were like really young when we heard that on the radio.
That's fantastic.
We just stayed home from school.
As much as I hate for people other than myself to sing on the podcast, that was great. That was incredible.
We'll have to teach it to you. So yeah. Bore the rest of America.
We can have a trio.
That was great.
I have one last question to throw in before we go, and this is from Joe Dator, D-A-T-O-R. Will Ron Liebman ask you to take his name off this episode?
That's funny.
Yeah,
he's nodding.
Never.
Yes.
He's nodding.
And now, Robert Redford.
Oh, I love working with him.
Yeah.
He's a sweet guy.
Yeah.
I'm a very dedicated fellow for a lot of causes, a lot of good stuff. He does a lot of good stuff. Besides Sundance, my God, how much work is he giving people?
And Burt Lancaster?
I never worked with Burt Lancaster.
You did Victory at Entebbe, but you probably didn't have any
scenes.
Oh, I didn't have any scenes with him.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Nor did I have scenes with Elizabeth.
There was an article in Today's Times about Victory at Entebbe, and that's where Netanyahu's brother was killed.
Right.
He's the first Israeli. He was the only Israeli soldier killed. That has special meaning, obviously, for Netanyahu.
I remember there were two movies out. There was that one, Raid on Entebbe.
There was Raid and
Raid
there was Victory.
And Victory.
With Charles Bronson.
Right.
That was the other one.
Why do I remember Yafet Koto being in it?
Yes. He played, African.
Idi Amin. You know who played Idi Amin and
died
on the set? Godfrey Cambridge.
No, kidding. I've heard
we're
that.
Fans
I
of was Godfrey standing there. Cambridge.
Who was also in Bye Bye Braverman.
Yeah.
He was a New York actor.
Yeah, funny guy.
Yes, and a nice man.
Yeah, that was really...
Well, Gil...
That's
not
just
a good way to end the show, though.
Just a couple of weeks ago, I was walking down the street, and one guy looked at me, and he goes, "Oh, I know you. You're Godfrey Cambridge."
Oh, dear.
So long.
Not anymore.
For a while. That's all the song.
No, wait. When he said "You're Godfrey Cambridge," it made me think of Joan Crawford and Katharine Hepburn.
Yeah, they lived in the same.
Lived in the same neighborhood, and you know, people would always come by and say to Katharine Hepburn, "Oh, Miss Crawford, aren't you Joan?"
And anyway, Crawford.
That's not the point. Anyway,
33 years of her joy.
You two are a pair.
Anyway. Poor Joan Crawford died, and somebody Katharine Hepburn was taking a walk, and somebody said, "Oh, Miss Crawford." She said, "I'm not Miss Crawford anymore."
Oh, that's nice.
You ruined it. I was on a run with that. You ruined it.
You two have to do it to like a, I don't know what it is, the gin game, something where you can get this repartee going. This
on
is
stage, like, nothing. We just,
right.
This was like sitting with Stiller and Mirror.
So,
oh, that's a compliment. I love
yes.
them.
Oh, yes.
So quick plugs, Jessica. Yes. Archer.
Archer.
On FX.
Archer on FX, yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to season 8. Going to Comic-Con next week.
It's wonderful and funny. And Ron is on the show as Ron Cadillac.
He has yeah. been.
And I teach at the new school.
Yeah, what do you teach?
Yes.
Acting, obviously.
What do I teach? Ballet. What do I teach?
Snowboarding.
Well, it could have been acting for the stage. Yeah. It could have been acting
algebra
for the screen.
Algebra, too. I teach algebra, too. I flunked algebra 1 twice.
He's a great teacher, that I can tell you. The kids worship him.
I love teaching.
And I will really say do. This. Is this the end of the show? Mm-hmm. I want to end yes. on a positive yes. note here.
End on
end with the song.
I have learned more about acting from Ron Liebman than I did from any acting teacher or any experience that I've ever had on the stage.
Wow.
That I will tell you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, now I'm going to wrap up the show, and I want you to sing that song you started singing.
Which one?
What song? Which, you know, goodbye.
The Breakfast Club again?
No. The
oh,
other one.
It was from television. So long.
For a while. That's all the songs. For a while. Your hit parade.
So long from your hit parade.
And the songs that you pick to be played.
So long.
Lucky Strike means fine tobacco.
Well, this is.
Goodbye, Lucky Strike Hit Parade.
Goodbye, everybody. Nice to see you in the television show. Very good. He's very funny.
This has been Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast with my co-host, Frank Santopadre, once again at Nutmeg with our engineer, Frank Verderosa.
Thank you forever.
And we have been talking to the double great, Ron Liebman and Jessica Walter.
I don't think I've ever been this entertained by guests on this show.
Oh, I bet you have.
115 episodes. You guys are.
You mean we don't get any money for this?
Yeah.
And wait a minute.
You're two,
hold it.
You're two guests who make me feel like singing.
Aww.
That's sweet.
It's the saddest thing I've ever heard.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
We had such
fun.
A good time.
It's the most
pleasure.
Fun I've ever had on one of these.
I'd have to thank Frank because I know he said, oh, I have to talk to them. And would you do the show?
It's you guys. No, it's you guys. If you didn't have the personas that allowed this, we would just clam up.
Well,
yes,
I clammed up before.